man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
All right, welcome back to Who Shot Ya? My name is Drea Clark. I will be hosting today's episode. Our beloved Iffy Wadaway is not with us, but wherever he is, I am sure he is talking about Timothy Chalamet. So we do have a great show and a movie I'm really looking forward to bringing to light and darkness as well. And joining me on my left in my Zoom is my sweet, sweet buddy, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what is good?
Well, you know, Drea, I know this is kind of a callback to something that I already had as a what's good, but there is breaking news, and so I felt like I needed to share. Hallmark Channel finally announced their countdown to Christmas schedule today. All 40 titles that they'll be running between late October and the end of the year, and not letting themselves be outdone by Lifetime, they too are doing a film about a gay couple. They've got a movie called The Christmas House. It stars Jonathan Bennett. It's about a couple who's looking to adopt. And so this is a whole new era of Hallmark. You know, they brought in a new CEO this summer, Wanya Lucas, and there's clearly a new sheriff in town. We are seeing much more diverse programming from them. And, you know, the older audience is already expressing their displeasure in the Facebook page, and whoever's running social media for the network is like, yeah, well, sorry, bye, which I'm really enjoying.
It's probably the best tactic you can take. Jonathan Bennett is adorable, and he, if for anyone not familiar with his name, played Aaron Samuels in Mean Girls.
Yes, he did.
And hosts some kind of like cooking, baking competition thing.
I lose track. Yeah, and he's also he's been in Hallmark movies before, but this will be the first time. He's an openly gay actor, but it's the first time he's playing obviously a gay character for the network. So
yes, I'm delighted. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah,
and I'm very proud of you for sneaking in a little Christmas. We'd be bereft without it. We have a very exciting returning friend and guest today, comedian who has a new album, a comedy album that I have heard with these ears, and I would give it a screen it in the parlance of Who Shot Ya. And he recently submitted it for consideration for a Grammy, and I've never had anything considered for a Grammy, so I thought that was pretty cool. Mike Kaplan, welcome back. What's good?
Thank you so much for having me back. It is good to be back. I'll say a little more, but first, thank you for mentioning that it has been submitted, because it is, as you may know, of course, an honor just to be considered, just to be submitted to be considered to be nominated. There it is.
So this is a fourth of your submission for consideration EGOT, then.
100%. Yes. What is good right now is actually a sub or superset, I haven't double checked the math, of the fact that I am here with you right now because of my uncertainty just a couple hours ago of how my capacity to do that would exist, because a couple of days ago, my computer started telling me that it was full or almost full. And so I started deleting things. I'm like, okay, computer, you know what, when you're full, I listen to computers as well as people. And it just kept doing it no matter how much I got rid of. And then yesterday I recorded a podcast of my own, and then it said, sorry, you can't save it. It's full. And then I tried doing another one, and it wouldn't let me post, and the files weren't showing up anywhere. And so this morning, it's in the afternoon where I am, when it's in the morning for you, but a few hours ago, I restarted my computer and updated it. Great. I'm just honestly grateful that it is working, because once it reloaded, I could find the files. I could post the files. It has half of a terabyte, which I think is a large amount. It's not anywhere close to full. It's not even rounded up to full. So I'm just grateful to have working technology to be able to be here with you fine folks, my friends, on this podcast today. That is what's good.
Hooray!
That's a very topical one. Yeah.
Drea, what's good?
Well, thank you, Alonzo. I will add to the technology. Yesterday, my cat fell asleep on top of my router, and I didn't know it, and everything went down, and I rebooted everything 12 times until I realized, for some reason, there is both a power switch on the back and an on-off switch on the top. And that's the part she slept on because she's a jerk. So yeah, I get it. What's good for me is there is, I'm sure people have heard about a campaign called Get Mitch or Die Trying, which is raising extraordinary amounts of funds in the last week. That's going to be distributed to Democratic candidates in Senate races that they've deemed competitive. And my dear friend Carolyn Cohagen, who's a wonderful author, and I've mentioned her books here before, she runs a series of writing workshops with some other women called Girls with Pens. And their website is girlswithpens.org. And they're making their workshops, their online workshops, available for a donation. So you would send them your receipt to a donation to the Get Mitch or Die Trying campaign and then be able to take one of these workshops, which I thought was great. It is a time where it is easy to feel very impotent and I'll just say impotent. And so that made me happy that my friend and her friends banded together and took their own resources and skills and were like, what can we do? Plus they have really cool classes. So check it out. Workshops for Democracy, girlswithpens.org. So today's show, I'm super excited about. I've mentioned this film before because it was actually my staff pick a couple weeks ago. So maybe a slight spoiler to what my eventual vote will be. But we're going to discuss Lingua Franca. We're going to be taking a question from the Who Shot Line. And we will, as ever, be ending with staff picks. But first, it is time for our news segment. I loved on our Facebook group today, the other day, someone mentioned that they got confused every week that we kept talking about this new segment of ours. Doing it.
Yeah, they wondered how it could be a new segment after 3 years. I was like, oh, yeah. It's a news segment.
News. Yep. All the news you can eat. Our news segment, Itadic, which is short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, is this important? Do I care? Alonzo, take us there.
I was just thinking, like, if we had Judy Dench in here, there'd be no question of where one word ends and the other one begins. But we're American, so we butcher the language. Speaking of butchering the language, for those of you who've watched Netflix's new film, The Devil All the Time, you got to hear the opportunity to hear some really fun accents, most interestingly from Robert Pattinson as the sexual predator / southern preacher Preston Teagarden. According to director Antonio Campos in an interview with The Insider, Pattinson refused to use a dialect coach. And the director himself didn't even know what Pattinson was going to sound like until he shot the very first take of the film. According to Campos, quote, "I don't get worried about those things. I'd rather have someone come with something weird that's a choice than something that isn't thought out. So I knew he would come with something interesting." Here's a clip of what Mr. Pats sounded like.
"Some of us are better off than others. And I see plenty of white meat and red meat laid out on this table. And I suspect that the folks that carried them platters in eat mighty good sometimes."
Okay. Is this important? Do you care?
I feel like we're pretty unabashed Robert Pattinson fans here.
Yeah.
And so I feel I'll give him more leniency than others. And it's also funny, this sits so squarely with my thoughts of when he was in the thick of his Twilight days. I had such delight in the fact that he refused to get a personal trainer and get really buff as Edward Cullen. Much like Taylor Lautner, who I'm sure as his character was like, yes, I'm huge and made of muscles now. And Robert Pattinson was like, no, I'm good.
I'm 110 years old.
Yeah, I'm 110 years old. I do not need a six pack. And so he did not get himself one. And this sort of fits with me. I do feel that Southern accents often get the brunt of actors who are like, oh, I got it. I can do this. Don't you worry. I for sure know what that sounds like.
As somebody who grew up in the South, yes, I agree with this. I think that British actors, though, I mean, it certainly varies. We think, oh, they're all so good at American voices. And I mean, they're not. There are some that really don't get it. But I do think that specificity always helps. Like, I think Ewan McGregor did a lot of very kind of mushy, non-committal American accents in a lot of different movies. But then in I Love You, Philip Morris, where he was playing a character who was specifically Southern, I felt like that gave him something to like put his ear on, and it actually sounded legit. So, but yeah, I'm kind of with the director. It's like better to make a weird choice than just kind of come in with no ideas and no real interest in making something interesting.
I'll add that I'm not a Southern person, and so I certainly will turn it over to, like, I'll co-sign whatever anyone who is a Southern person says about this, because I'm listening to it and I'm like, yep, that could be real. That could be, I don't know. I grew up in New Jersey. I live in New York. I know very little. I haven't delved, like, I love Benoit Blanc. I do love the choice that Daniel Craig made. I loved listening to him, and I do enjoy listening to that clip of Robert Pattinson. So I guess I'll say I don't think it's important, and I do care.
Nice. Fair enough. He actually answered the questions. First off, I don't believe you're from New Jersey and live in New York, because you've not said forgot about it or told me you're walking here yet.
That's
so,
the thing.
Yeah.
You have to forget about that, because I am walking here.
Yes. All right.
This past week, Space Shuttle Almanac confirmed via Twitter that Tom Cruise will be working alongside Elon Musk and NASA to shoot a movie in space. The director of the currently untitled film will be Doug Liman, who worked with Cruise on Edge of Tomorrow and American Made. Does anybody even remember American Made? I feel like we were the only people that saw that movie. He will also be traveling to space with Cruise. The producer and story advisor of the space movie will be Christopher McQuarrie, who's responsible for several recent Mission Impossible movies. The film was pitched to Universal via an, quote, exuberant Zoom call with Cruise, Liman, McQuarrie, and producer PJ Van Sandwyk. It will have a budget of around $200 million. Is this important? Do you care? And does Cruise ever have a Zoom call that isn't exuberant?
Yeah, he's for sure. He has a couch just for Zooms that he bounces on Oprah style. He got a steady cam.
The cameras are just the right place to fit him in.
Yeah, so that it'll stay with him.
Oh yeah, I think they should do it on Quibi, you know, that where you can get his view and then also a view of him.
Yeah, done. Oh, we just solved their problem.
Boom.
I, like, a lot of me wants to roll my eyes at this because of course Tom Cruise is going to shoot a movie in space, but also, yeah, fine. If people are going to funnel money into the space program, there are a lot worse things you could put money into. And what's interesting to me is that NASA is like, oh, thank you. Because all of the recent attention to, you know, JPL's done so much. And like, we've done all of this like Mars concentration. And the interest, if you look over the years from the 60s to now, of how Americans look at space travel, and there's so many movies set in space that are obviously, you guys, not shot there.
What?
They're shot. I'm sorry. They're on sound stages with green screens, and even they look gravity? Amazing. I'm so sorry, Alonzo.
Even
I can't
the
even
moon
look
landing.
At you right now.
Yeah.
I'm blown away by this. I would love for there to be a function for NASA that isn't accommodating rich guys who want to go to space. But I fear that's their job right now, is that like they're the park ranger, basically, and that the rich guy has to go to NASA for his own sort of self-funded foray into rocketry or whatever. It's like, all right, fine, if that's. But yeah, I mean, in principle, sure. I like the idea that we're paying attention to space. It saddens me that we haven't continued to, like, you know, give NASA the attention that it got during its glory days. You know, Elon Musk is a problem.
I reserved all my eye rolls for Elon Musk's involvement.
And like, I mean, again, it's like, show me the script. That's you want to go to space? That's great. Show me the script, please.
It is a good team for it. I will say, I really like Doug Liman. I loved Edge of Tomorrow, and a movie that ironically holds up really well to repeat viewings.
There you go.
Get it?
Oh yeah. Appropriately even.
Yeah.
I love the Mission Impossible movie. Tom Cruise makes good movies. I mean, here's the thing is that like they we've gone to space and we've made movies, and so you can just you could just good. Like, it reminds me of this old joke of Paul Reiser's where he like bemoaned surprise parties as eventually, like, you're lying to your friend, and by the time they get there, they're like, oh, I'll be darned, and then it's the same party, and then you've had 3 weeks of sneaking around the same party plus a guy is darned. Like, we're gonna get to us, it's gonna be, oh, the same movie, and oh, and he actually went to space, oh, who cares, you know, like, that's oh, he did a thing. Like, imagine if he did take that $200 million. I mean if we are all the problems on Earth solved, like, how about shoot it in a COVID laboratory? How about shoot it in an African village? How about shoot it, you know, ooh, what about the bottom of the ocean? How about on land where people are suffering and that money can help?
I'm amending my thought. Yes, much better ways. $200 million budgets are just stone cold stupid anyway. As someone who watches an extraordinary amount of movies in the $600,000 range, $200 million can just sort of suck it. So yeah, I'll agree to that part. All right.
What would be hilarious is that if they shoot it in space and it looks fakier than all the movies that were shot in Burbank, you know?
Here's hoping. Or the whole thing is just like Tom Cruise selfies.
Shoot it in space, but the set is just Burbank.
Yeah. We recreated Burbank at the International Space Station.
Burbank in space.
We got the sets just right.
I love it so much. Yeah, this thing better look like Muppets in space is what's up. okay, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we will be talking about Lingua Franca just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows at Maximum Fun.
Hey, you like movies? What about coming up with movie ideas over the course of an hour? Because that's what we do every week on Story Break, a writer's room podcast where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to come up with a pitch for a movie or TV show based off of totally zany prompts.
Like that time we reimagined Star Wars based on our phone's autocomplete.
Luke Skywalker is a family man and it's Star Wars, but it's a good idea.
Okay, how about that time we broke the story of a bunch of Disney Channel original movies based solely on the title and the poster?
Okay, Sarah Hyland is a 50-foot woman. Let's just go with it, guys.
Or the time we finally cracked the Adobe Photoshop feature film.
Stamp tool is your Woody, and then the autofill is the new Buzz Lightyear.
Join us as we have a good time imagining all the movies Hollywood is too cowardly to make. Story Break comes out every Thursday on Maximum Fun. I don't know why I'm using this voice now.
All right, welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I am your host, Drea Clark, and in the virtual studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Mike Kaplan.
Today we're talking about Lingua Franca, directed and starring Isabel Sandoval. Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
Sure, and I will add that she's also the writer of the film. Yes, and
she also edited it.
Well, all right then.
Fun fact.
She stars as Olivia. She is an undocumented Filipinx trans woman who is living in Brighton Beach, working as a nurse for an elderly woman named Olga, played by the late, great Lynn Cohen. Olga's grandson has just gotten out of rehab. His name is Alex. He's played by Eamon Farron from the most recent season of Twin Peaks. And he is trying to get his life back on track. He and Olivia grow close. She is worried about ICE and is trying to find an American to marry her so that she can get a green card. She is paying a guy to do this, but he backs out of it. There's a possibility that things might work out with Alex on a number of levels, but Alex still has a lot of his own stuff to work out. This is a very personal and gritty kind of indie film about people and their struggles. And while it is very much about one trans woman's experience in the United States, it also has a lot of sort of broader points to make about America under Trump and the current stage, the current status of immigration to this country.
I think I'll start off talking about watching films with trans stories in general, and Alonzo might feel similar to me. that I look at a lot of them for festivals, so possibly more than your average viewer. And I have a tendency to brace for impact when I start watching them, because there's generally a kernel of violence that always comes in. And it is one that is certainly based in a reality that a lot of trans people, especially trans women, face. But it's also for narrative expectation, or for the idea of stories giving us entry to perspective, it's this kind of damning sensibility that, oh, all trans women have in their lives is impending doom and the threat of physical violence upon their person. So having seen this movie a couple of times, because I programmed it for Bentonville Film Festival and so saw it a while ago and then rewatched it for this, it's one of those that I've obviously very much enjoyed it because I did programming, and then watching it again and realizing that this one is... there are moments of sort of psychological torture manifested by a villain who is a very gray character in terms of being going through struggles himself and not just being that black and white, like bad guy or whatever. So there was so much... a different layer of threat to this. And that sounds like a strange thing to be grateful for, but I was happy.
It's funny because I had watched this a few weeks back when it first aired on Netflix, and then Dave caught up with this week, and there was a moment in the film where he paused and he was like, is this about to get really, you know, is this going to get brutal? And I said, it's not about to unfold the way you think. And, you know, we saw the same thing happen in Pose on FX, where you have characters who are vulnerable in different ways, but they don't go down the easy path of, you know, the like you said, the anti-trans violence that we so often see in trans narratives. And I saw interviews with people who make that show happen, who are like, we're tired of that story. We don't want every story about trans life to be about being the victim of violence. So we're not telling that story. And I think Sandoval, again, is sort of like, yeah, I don't want to tell that story either. I mean, at least she doesn't. She chooses not to. And I think you're right. There's a lot of other layers of hurdles that this character has to face, and moments that are uncomfortable, and you don't know how it's going to resolve and how other characters are going to behave. But I think, and we're going to talk about it, I think this is going to come up a lot in this episode, the difference when you have a trans story that not only, you know, centers a trans performer, but comes from a trans creator, it's not going to fall under the categories that we have gotten used to when non-trans people are telling this story.
It seems almost like, I mean, from my perspective, watching it for the first and only time just a few days ago, like that fear existed for me and my girlfriend as well, as we're like, oh God, you know, is this? And so, I mean, in some way, like I in no way know what it is like to live as a trans person in however much fear exists, you know, in the life of an undocumented person. But I feel like that certainly, I imagine, was intended. Like we're supposed to wonder if it is, like, we're supposed to live in that fear, that at least vicariously, or, you know, as much as, you know, a person who isn't the person having the experience can, via, you know, a movie, via an artistic expression. And so I'm grateful for two reasons. I mean grateful for way more, but like grateful that I don't love watching violence, like, unless it's cartoonish, you know, like I'm good with action movies, with Tom Cruise type movies, but like horror is hard for me unless it has like a specific, you know, if it's great and has a message and there's a reason. And so like, if there was violence in this movie or a movie like this, I would be like, this is important. It seems like it's especially like if told by a person whose story it is or is relevant or resonant to. But so I'm grateful that it is already a tired trope in the genre. I'm glad that there is a genre. I'm glad that it doesn't have to be the story in every movie. movie about a trans person's experience, because there are now enough movies about trans people's experience that they can, that they don't have to let everyone know in every movie that violence is, if not possible, actual.
Yeah. I think too that it, every time we always talk about that, the more films there are, the less it's a monolith, or like you're the only thing representing an entire identity, because no one ever is. And for this, Alonzo, I'm glad you brought up the undocumented nature of her existence and how that concerns her almost more than, you know, what she, you know, what she's worrying about is not being misgendered. Both her and her girlfriend, who's another, her like friend girl, who's another a Filipina trans woman, are, you know, in the idea of passing to whatever sort of cisgendered standards you're looking for, they're, you know, they have a very feminine look to them. That's not this story. This story is about complexities beyond that. That's not to say it's not a fear of hers, but she's her, what she's being haunted by is the increasing presence of immigration in the changing dynamics of how undocumented people are being treated and rounded up. And it's a film that has so many threads to it that are so elegantly handled. There are several Trump quotes that are threaded through this, and I think you just hear them. I don't know if we ever see him. And it's this small idea of what this administration or what these changes have done and how they affect the people who are living here, and just the panic that gives them. Yeah.
And that's also not to say that there isn't a sense of intersectionality between the various threads of her life. The fact that she is trans means that she is misgendered on her passport, on her official paperwork. And because of statutes in the Philippines, she can't easily change that or change it at all. Like basically that's another hurdle. And so, you know, I admire when movies allow for people to be more than one thing and to be struggling with more than one thing. You know, it's like so often we get queer films where the queerness is it, and it's the one thing that the character has to deal with. And it's like, no, this is the real world. And, you know, she may be at home in her own skin, and she may, as you say, sort of, you know, pass to the casual observer. But at the same time, the fact that she is trans, and the fact that, you know, she's fled one conservative repressive government for another one, you know, that from both of those ends, her very status as a human being is called into question, and is making it difficult for her to, you know, get the paperwork she needs to get the immigration status that she needs. So like all these things kind of feed into each other.
Mike, when I rewatched this, I actually thought of you and was like, ooh, I should have given him a heads up. This is sort of there's a little bit of a vegan nightmare thread to the very beginning. There's some imagery because Alex, who plays the, you know, our main character is a caregiver for this woman, Olga, and Alex is the grandson that's come back and is living and is working at this sort of meat packing plant or whatever. And there's literally just like slabs, carcass of animals like on conveyors.
You think Sloan's going to come in and start boxing on them?
Truly, they're horrifying. And I did. I was like, oh, I should have given people a heads up. So we'll give you that heads up. But on the other hand, I really liked that the grounding, this was one of those stories that, you know, we see our Olivia is this caregiver and she's very good at her job and she's got like the mundane tasks, but she's also taking care of this elderly woman who's dealing with some dementia and having to, you know, just put a lot of sort of emotional investment in a job. And Alex has this very sort of blue collar meat packing plant. Like, and those are, when you look at this and it's set in a part of New York that we don't always see, this is not the I'm walking here New York. This is these are people with jobs who happen to live in the city. Mike, you're a professional New York liver. were these things that you either related to or found welcome to see on screen in a way that maybe you hadn't before, or maybe you see a lot of meatpacking movies? I don't know.
I do not. see a lot of meatpacking movies. I do appreciate the retroactive care and content warning. And thank you that we can now finally get to the main thing that's the most important about this movie is my feelings and how they interact as a vegan in this, like, how could you do this
triggered
to me?
But,
I mean, it is a horrifying sight. It is something that, you know, as a person who cares about the welfare of animals and humans, and humans as animals, but also non-human animals, it's something that I think that people don't see, people don't know about and talk about and think about enough, and to the point that in the movie it wasn't made a big deal of, that it was a, you know, like, this is like, this is just a job, it's a place, it's just a horrifying building, you know, it's just a place full of murder, a place full of, oh god, just hang, that's, and so I guess I'm you know, grateful, I wish none of it happened, but in life, but I am, I guess, grateful for the fact that it does also, like, help people. Like, you know, there's so many people like, I don't want to watch any of those documentaries because I don't want to know what happens. And so I feel like so much of this, like, so many people do watch movies to, quote unquote, escape, you know, which is very reasonable. Like, I think there's an Ursula K. Le Guin quote about, like, paraphrasing, like, escape is heading towards freedom. So, like, what's the problem? You know, like, why don't we want to allow people to escape when they have so many, everyone has so many different, as the movie points out, you know, challenges individually, and we're all doing our best. But we weren't actually sure where, I think when my girlfriend and I were watching it, the first shot of just like an empty boardwalk, we're like, did they just shoot this now? Like, where is this? What is this? How is this? Like, it certainly is a part of New York that isn't a part of my daily experience. So I'm grateful to have my comfort zone or my knowledge base expanded in this way. But for sure, that, I mean, in many ways, this movie is something that I won't be able to forget about it.
Nice. You got back there. I actually hadn't thought about, but you know, we talk, there's a level of desensitization. Did I get there? Is that the word?
That's it.
Thanks, fellas. That happens in general. And there is something, you know, the scenes of him at work are pretty brief, and it's not like we're actually seeing slaughter, but there's just this casual array of animal carcasses on hooks in meat lockers. And it is an interesting thing how that translates to his character, because I think one of the things I found fascinating about this film, and I alluded to this before, but Alex is the love interest of sorts. He is a very complicated person. We meet him, he's come back, he's very much the black sheep of his family. He clearly has a drinking problem, and I have difficulties watching, and as you guys know, because I've talked about on the show before, watching addiction play out is hard for me, and watching, like, he falls off the wagon real easy, and you know it's not going to be good, and you want more for him, because you've already watched, like, members of his family belittle him, and he doesn't have it great, and he seems okay, and then it's interesting, this is the, like, when I was talking about the elegance of this, there's nuance and subtlety of this film, that this character who we see desensitized to these carcasses, to all this, the life he's living, the very casual cruelty, the sustained casual cruelty that he puts Olivia through when we get to sort of our sort of climactic emotional beat. It reminded me of classic movies like Gaslight, when you watch a man be terrible to a woman. But in Gaslight, we see that he's being terrible and she's the one who's being lied to and all that. In this, it's so easy for him to take advantage of her and to not have a problem watching her squirm and worry, and kind of he's proud that he can comfort her in her worry. And I it stuck with me so much, the idea of the damage people can do to each other, and what needs to go through a character's life for them to get to a point to cause that kind of damage. And I think they set it up well.
What's the opposite of a white savior movie? Because that's what we're dealing with here.
That's a great point. It's the inverse of a white savior.
He's the white, like, you know, sash weight pulling her down, you know.
But it's a good point because he wants to be the white savior.
He fancies himself riding in on the horse, but no.
With that, what are our final reviews of Lingua Franca in the wording of this show? Even though theaters are not all open, would you screen it? Is our highest. So even if you're not encouraging people to actually go to the cinema, that's still how we're rating things. Stream it or skip it. Mike, please.
I certainly would advocate not skipping it. I feel like this conversation and like the conversations that I've had with my girlfriend about it after watching it have been so valuable. I feel like those, like the conversations about it will happen no matter what. So I'm too literally minded thinking about streaming, which is the only way to watch it right now safely and healthily, compared to screening it. I'll get on the metaphorical train and say I would recommend screening it.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I obviously and I think what's great about this is that it is featured on Netflix. It is part of their deal with Ava DuVernay's company, Array Releasing. And this is so much the kind of movie that would have been like big on the LGBT film festival circuit, played like, you know, LA, New York, San Francisco, a handful of other big urban markets, and then been, you know, relatively inaccessible until maybe like a DVD release or whatever. So the fact that everybody who's got Netflix can watch this movie right now, I think it's really exciting that they will be able to access this really unique and interesting up-and-coming voice in cinema. Like, this is not Sandoval's first feature, but this is definitely the one that I think is getting the most sort of mainstream attention. So by all means, I vote screen it, and I say stream it.
Wonderful. I am also a screen it. And yes, that's a great point, Alonso. This is actually Isabel's third feature. It is her first since transitioning. And I think I'm very excited to see what she does next. And really thankful for all of the questions and musings this one brought about. So Lingua Franca, there you go. We will be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. Ah, high school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95, we did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both. So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan-Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I am still your host, Drea Clark. In the virtual studio with me are
Alonso Duraldi
and Mike Kaplan.
Now it's time to play a call from the Who Shot Line. Casey, play that call.
Hey guys, this is Michael in Des Moines. I am calling so I never again have to hear if he referenced his desire for wet ass calls again. Now, as you know, many celebrities and actors have a little more time now that the apocalypse is in full swing, and we've got cast reunions for Goonies, Princess Bride, and many other treasured films. What offbeat cast reunions and script readings would you folks like to see and hear? Shout out to Drea and Alonzo for liking my tweets sometimes, and Iffy for being iffy. Thanks, guys.
Yay, Des Moines! What's up? Woo-woo! This is true. And I love, as you guys know, I was talking about the Princess Bride cast read before that happened.
Yes.
I love when they're done well. Scott Pilgrim did a great one. There's been a few that have also been sort of like gender swapped, so whole new cast. So I think there's a nice two-pronged approach to this. We can look at cast reunions of who would it be fun to see in this sort of setting. And then also the, like, if you were going to recast something.
Oh, okay.
The cast reunion that I thought of right away, because I think it's a good framework, and I also think they would play around and have a lot of fun, is Bridesmaids. I feel I love Bridesmaids. There's so many talented, funny people in that. And I think, like, just the smaller Bridesmaids characters, actually just the Melissa McCarthy alone, the idea of the new riffs, I can't imagine how much of that movie was cut out, because you know they did so much improv, and a live read of that would just go haywire and have new...
The DVD extras have, like, there are some Wendy McClendon Covey moments where she's going off on a tear that are so funny. Yeah, that's the kind of reading where, like, is there a script? Do we give them the outline and let them run with it? Like, do they do a transcription of what's in the movie? Like, I don't even know what you would do, but yeah, that'd be fun.
I would love, they can call me, I'll produce that myself.
I read an article of course, you know, you see these like reunion articles, you know, where they find everybody and do like the oral history of a movie. And usually it's, you know, Entertainment Weekly or Rolling Stone. So this year is the 30th anniversary of Whit Stillman's Metropolitan. So of course the interview was in Town and Country.
Stop it.
Yes.
That's the most Whit Stillman thing I've ever heard.
Right? You know he subscribes. And so I would love to see a reading of Metropolitan done by, like, you know, actors in their, like, early 20s right now. Like a new crop of folks. Not that I don't love the original Metropolitan cast, but I think it would be great to see what, you know, and obviously you could, you know, get Zendaya in there. Like, let's mix it up. Let's, you know.
Get some Zendaya, some Elle Fanning.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I have a few ideas, one of which will be a joke. I'll leave that to, I'm not going to tell
you. You're not going to tell us which one?
I won't tell you which one's a joke, but I'm going to present them all as serious.
Good.
Like, sincerely, The Princess Bride was my first, like, favorite movie, and so it would have been what I selected were it not, like, the first one of these that I even knew existed. And, but while you were talking, I thought, I was thinking, like, what are my other beloved movies? Like, I love Fight Club, I love, like, Die Hard. I'm like, I think Die Hard would be an interesting one. Yeah. I wish Alan Rickman were still possible, but then when you were talking about Bridesmaids, I thought Wet Hot American Summer would be a wonderful one. A similarly, you know, hilarious cast that could do, you know, I'd be happy to watch them have a conversation, you know, so that would be a fun thing to see. I love a good Paul Rudd. But I guess my most sincere answer, since this is the one that I definitely would like to see, is Muppets from Space.
Good. Yep. Definitely not the joke. Definitely.
Nope. That's my serious one. The joke was Die Hard. Okay, great.
Thank you to everyone who's called in. Please continue to do so. I will not say that we are out of wet ass calls. I'll leave that for Iffy, and Michael will make sure he knows that you did your best to fill up that well. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. Now, gang, it is time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Any movie at all. Mike, no pressure, any movie at all. Why don't you start?
Now, I don't remember what I recommended last time.
I hope you say the same thing.
I also hope... I'm going to say two just in case. I might have, if I didn't, I wish I did, recommend last time the... do you guys know Henry Phillips? He made a movie called Punching the Clown.
You did. This is the film you did because I programmed Punching the Clown at Slam Dance. The only reason I remember it.
And one of the reasons that I would have mentioned it is because Henry asked me to be in the sequel, Punching Henry. So forget about that. I've already recommended Henry's Punching the Clown and Punching Henry.
Friend.
So my new recommendation is now connected to my friendship with you, Drea, because you. So in the past several weeks, since the movie is the new Charlie Kaufman movie, which name is a sentence and it's hard for me to remember.
I'm thinking of ending things.
Yes. I'm Thinking of Ending Things is like, I've loved Charlie Kaufman movies, like philosophically, and like they resonate so much with the, I mean, I don't want to say like the kind of comedy that I do, of like with parentheses within parentheses. I love the article that I read in the New York Times where he had been interviewed and the whole first draft had to be scrapped, but then parts of the first draft came back parenthetically in the final draft. And I was like, I just love this guy. I loved adaptation. I love Synecdoche, New York. And so if I understand correctly, you talked about this last week.
Yep.
So I'm sure that you delved into many, co-signed, seconded, thirded, fourth, whatever it is.
Alonzo's happy because he loved it. Alonzo, I want you to know, when I recommended it, I said, Alonzo also loves Synecdoche, and this might be right up your alley. So yeah.
Well, yeah, it had so much of the feel of Synecdoche, New York, like the, you know, the things that it does to like the watcher's brain and sharing things about both the creator's brain, the character's brains, just consciousness and, you know, emotions in general. Like it really, like if art is meant to like evoke emotions, I feel like this is just like the raw source of it. It's just like, do you even need like a narrative story that you can be like, what actually did happen in this story? He's like, no, like the story is just to get you to the emotions and here they are.
Alonzo's so mad we didn't have you last week.
No. No, I had a much better time. Ingu is the sand in my oyster that creates the pearl.
It's true. Alonzo, what kind of staff pick are we looking at for you this week?
So, a thing I've realized is that a lot of times I've been, you know, pushing stuff that's on Criterion Channel, which is great, and I love it, and I always recommend that people check it out. But I know that, not everybody can, you know, work a multitude of streaming platforms into their budget. Maybe Criterion is not feasible for you, but it turns out if you have HBO Max, which a great many people do, and you look in their TCM section, you will see a lot of overlap. There's a lot of Criterion stuff that is sort of hiding in plain sight over in the TCM area of HBO Max. So, maybe let your fingers do the walking. The movie that I will recommend that is available on both HBO Max and the Criterion Collection is, of course, the Japanese classic Destroy All Monsters, which is the sort of grand slam Lollapalooza Avengers Endgame of the Toho monster universe, Godzilla and Mothra and King Ghidorah and a whole bunch of other kaiju characters are involved. Spangly space aliens. Somebody on Twitter was like, how many times has Wes Anderson seen this movie? And pulled various still shots that kind of, you're like, oh yeah, I can see the connection there. But it's just a ton of fun. It was one of my favorite movies when I was a little kid because it's like all the monsters coming together and stomping on things. And it remains entertaining. Dave and I watch it all the time. It's one of the keystone movies in our relationship, I would say. So if you've never watched Destroy All Monsters, go check it out on HBO Max or on the Criterion Channel. It's in both places.
I love you and Dave. Such a good team, such a good couple. Okay, so in a totally different genre, but in the same idea of, you know, we are at like the 6 month mark of all of this, and we're at the beginning of fall, meaning summer is leaving us by, meaning all of the things we maybe didn't get to do with this summer, the travels we didn't get to take. You guys, I watched The Trip to Greece and was blissfully happy for 2 hours. This is the fourth film in the Michael Winterbottom series, starring Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. I was trying to think of the most Welsh name I could, so I said Rhys, but Rob Brydon. The two of them play these sort of fictionalized character versions of themselves, going by their same names, still actors, similar backgrounds, but with a little more drama. They're just them traveling through different countries eating, although you don't really, you get like these glimpses. They set up a camera in the kitchen. You see all this beautiful stuff prepared, but they're not going to talk you through the course. They're just going to like try and do Michael Caine impressions or whatever they can to make each other laugh. So it's these very funny friends who do bits for like a little too long that if I was actually in the car, I'd be like, oh, I got it, Rob. I got it. You're good. You can stop. I made my way through this bit, my man, but in film form, and they're in these beautiful locales. So you guys, not surprisingly, the trip to Greece takes place in Greece, and it is stunning and beautifully sunny and this gorgeous ocean. And it was this small little vacation moment for me. And I highly recommend people sample that out themselves. Yeah, I enjoyed all of them too.
We talk about, we did the Before trilogy, which we talked about recently being the sort of like the big indie franchise, but look, we're up to four trips now. And yeah, these are all very much, you know, like aimed at that, at a similar marketplace, you know, demographic, I would say. All four of them are great. Italy is probably my favorite, but they're all terrific.
They also, I'll add, they all have a slight thing, which I like with my comedy, which is a little melancholy, is a little like introspective melancholy. There's narrative threads in there. There's mortality musings. Anyway, I quite enjoy those. And The Trip to Greece is on Hulu right now.
Nice.
Or I'm sure you can rent it somewhere. So, okay, this week we've got a Jumbotron.
Shut up. Can't believe it.
I'm excited. It's in our script. It is bolded.
Wow.
Bolded in the script. All right. I'm ready. I've got my Jumbotron head on. I'm going to read this with my best voice. Game Reel. Game Reel. I like it already. Game Reel is a podcast where three fresh out of college hosts use their film/animation degrees to write movies based on our favorite video games. Our URL is GameReelCast.com. That is like the reverse. So we've talked about movies before and then tried to come up with a video game of theirs, which I think we like lifted entirely from Freddie Wong. But this is a whole different, and it is very, it sounds very fun. Yeah. Go to Game Reel on Spotify or Podbean and share it with your friends.
Woohoo! Thank you, Game Reel.
GameReelCast.com. Can you imagine being fresh out of college? First off, I barely knew the internet when I was in college, but the idea
we
of
we didn't
like,
have the internet when I was in college, all right?
Oh, Grandpa. In my day, I walked uphill both ways to the internet.
Unless you work at the Pentagon, you know, we didn't have the internet.
You had an internet with those enormous machines that take up the whole room. Well, I'm excited for these people. I don't know what their whole thing is. They're just fresh out of college and they got a Jumbotron. They're making stuff done.
Yeah.
And they have a whole podcast. So
and you
yeah,
broke our Jumbotron seal. So you guys now, the water's fine. Come on in with your Jumbotrons.
And the URL is GameReelCast.com. And so that's Game, G-A-M-E, Reel, R-E-E-L, Cast, C-A-S-T, .com. If you'd like to purchase a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for personal message, and we will break up with someone.
In a heartbeat.
Or give them good news. Or $200 for a promotional one. Thanks. Mike Kaplan, thank you so much for being here with all of your words. You have more words than anyone, and you shared so many of them with us.
I thank you so much for welcoming me back. It is such a hospitable, wonderful, creative, inspiring environment. And now I know it's even like with the Grammy submission consideration nomination capacity of spreading the news that you've offered here. I didn't even realize that I was getting a $200 Jumbotron like value of just being here with my presence, my voice, my words. So I already valued it, and now I monetarily, numerically value it as well. Your friendship and your business is appreciated. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
Well, I guess I don't know if I've told you about my new album that's been submitted to the Grammys. It's called...
It's on the Grammy long list.
yes!
Nice!
I love it. Yeah, I... sincerely would love, just for anyone who is interested, or even just isn't, but mostly interested, to listen to the album. Like, if you're a Grammy voter, certainly please do your thing. If you know them, do that thing, but listen. The album is called AKA. You're on the internet. I believe you can find it. And also, my podcasts are called The Faucet and Broccoli and Ice Cream, and I have a bunch of other albums, and you can follow me on social media to find out more such things.
Yeah, if you want to dip your toe into AKA, there's these little animated segments online that you can look at, get a taste, well, sample. The first taste is free, and then you got to pay, you know, like any good dealer. If you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. And every call that we've ever gotten has blown my mind. I'm very impressed with the questions people come up with. So thank you, and please send some more in. If you have a comment, and make them wet or dry, I don't care. I'll take your question however you send it.
Like dog food, either one.
I respect it either way. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot You Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at facebook.com/group/WhoShotYouPodcast, or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the beloved Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.